was 16 years old when I gave my life to Christ, when I first encountered him. I did not come from a religious family. Whatever religious looks like, imagine the opposite of that, and that's the life where I was living. And for whatever reason, God decided to come and to make himself known to me in a very private but experiential way. And that encounter with God, again, where I wasn't looking for him and I most certainly wasn't deserving of his attention per se, led me to believe, before I knew anything about Jesus, before I knew anything about the gospel, it led me to believe that God was clearly a God who was interested in connection, that God had an interest and desire to bond and connect with me. As I started reading the Bible, my belief in God's desire to connect was confirmed. From the very beginning to the very end of the Bible, what you see is that God is communal by nature and that he desires connection and enjoys connection. One of the simplest illustrations of this was in the prophet Isaiah. He tells about this prophecy years before Jesus was alive, and he says that God is going to be sending his son and that he is going to be known as the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, and Emmanuel, which means God with us. So to recap, the God of the universe, and right now we understand there to be about 10 billion galaxies and 1 billion trillion stars, and I didn't even know that was a number, okay? But that's the galaxy as far as we know, okay? And it's changing and evolving still. So the God over all of that, he decides to come to mankind, and he decides to come in the form as a human. And of the few descriptive words that he gives us to understand who he is, he tells us that his name is going to be Emmanuel, God with us. And this is the focus that we're looking at today. Will you grab that outline? And here's our first fill-in. The God I wish we knew created us for community. Nobody likes a salesman who is not honest from the start, so I'm going to shoot straight with all of you guys. I personally value community. Even if I wasn't a Christ follower, I would value community. In my own life, when I look back the various seasons, if I were to take away like the major life events that happened, to a large degree, the amount I enjoyed or disliked a season, the difficulty that came, was largely because of the community of people that were around me. And when I look at those seasons that I didn't have people by my side, they were the darkest, they were the hardest, and they were the messiest. I made a mess out of life when I was alone. So again, remove God from the equation. Community is a core value for me. More specifically, I believe that community empowers us and enables us to experience the love that I believe we are actually made to experience. Galatians 5:14 says this, "The entire law is summed up in a single command, love your neighbor as yourself." The biggest repeated theme of the Bible is love. Everything that God does is about love. God is motivated by love, and he desires for us to build our life amongst that same love. And when we talk about love, I want to be super clear. Love, it is warm, it is soft, it is gentle. It's all those kinds of words, okay? But love is dynamic. When you read about the kind of love that Jesus exhibited, when you read what love is supposed to be in the Bible, you see that love is also tenacious, it is strong, it is confident. It's like gritty. There is resolve and there is courage. It's the kind of love that will stand in the front line and protect people. It's the kind of love that will enter the arena and fight on your behalf. It's these two sides of love that together make love trustworthy, that make love reliable, that make us feel safe. We are made for both sides of love. And science tells us the very same thing. Scientists no longer argue if we are made for attachment, connection, bond, and love. It's absolutely clear in the world of science that we are biologically and psychologically and physically made in all senses of the word for love and attachment and connection. If you look at the brain of babies and we were to feed our babies, but we were not to give them the love and the bond and the attachment that they need, that their brains would develop smaller brain scans would show they're actually smaller, and there would be these black holes or gaps where the neurons did not form, simply because that baby lacked love and connection and warmth that it was wired to receive. And the implications of those lack of neurons would have sad and negative lasting impacts for the rest of their life, very likely. And in worst case scenario, could also lead to death. There's this famous research from Harvard that looks at the lives of these people, and for years and decades, they're tracking the lives of these men. And the number one predictor of how happy and content people were was the quality of relationships these people had on their side. MRI studies are now showing us that rejection and physical pain activate the very same parts of the human brain. So much so that when we are feeling rejected by taking Tylenol, we can actually decrease the pain that rejection elicits. Research in leadership is showing us that people who reach their goals more often than not, they are people who are connected in healthy and loving support systems by other people. There's this cool research that's also telling us that people who eat unhealthy diets but are part of close-knit communities, that they actually live longer on average than people who eat healthy food and live isolated. Which means every time I eat Lolitas with my friends, I'm doing something good. Thus proving what I knew all along. Burritos, they are good for us, okay? So if you learn nothing else, eat burritos with your friends, okay? So the science is clear. It's backing up exactly what the Bible tells us, that from the womb to the tomb, we are made for relationships, we're made for connections. But what the Bible and science don't tell us, they don't tell us exactly how this is supposed to look. There's no black and white formula for how love, bond, attachment, and connection works Monday through Sunday in each of our individual lives, which makes complete sense because we're really different people and life seasons look really different in all of our lives. The guy who, or the woman who's recently retired and they went from working 40 plus hours a week to now they're not working those hours, how they do community love and attachment is gonna look different than when they were spending 40 plus hours a week in the office. The parents with young kids at home, with little babies and toddlers, that's my demographic right now. Like, I'm constantly running up against this wall of realizing having a toddler changes how community looks sometimes. There's people, like my sister, my brother-in-law, who recently just changed jobs. They both changed jobs, so now their jobs are in different location. There's a different rhythm at their work. Their whole life is having to be readjusted when it comes to this, how community looks, because of their jobs changing. Right now, I have a ton of friends in college, and of those friends who actually care about their grades, they are restructuring their whole lives right now because a whole new semester at school is starting, and their demands have shifted. New things are required of them. Life is fluid, so we can expect that the way that we engage in community and love and bonds and attachments is also going to be fluid. And beyond the different life seasons that you and I have throughout life, which are totally normal and to be expected, there is this reality that we are wired very differently. There are people who are wired for like 10 and 12 and 15, like good friends, and they need like all these people in their boat in order for life to be like complete. And I know that there's a lot of other people, and research supports this too, that there's other people who really kind of need two or three, maybe one good friend in the pocket, and they can thrive and feel loved and connected and attached. And then there's this whole world of introverts and extroverts, okay? Discovering that I was an introvert and actually doing research on what being an introvert means has helped me to find my groove like no other. Our society celebrates extroverts, and extroverts are awesome. But as an introvert, sometimes it can feel like we're doing it all wrong, but that's just the way we're wired. And learning how to process that out is important, which is the point of this whole section, which is you need to figure out how this looks in your life. I can't figure it out for you. And the person sitting next to you can't solve this for you. You need to figure this out. And fittingly, God is in the business of helping us figure out what we really need. Psalms 139 tells us, "Explore me, O God, and know the real me. Dig deeply and discover who I am." To figure out how this looks in your life, you're gonna need to get honest with yourself. I believe you're gonna wanna get honest with God. I have known people who have so stuck, they need to go to therapist about this to really figure out how is this supposed to look. Maybe you need to find a mentor, but the bottom line is you need to engage and figure out what does this look like for you. In my own marriage, this has been a topic that me and my husband have had to address together. I am an introvert with extroverted tendencies. My husband is an introvert with extremely introverted tendencies. okay? So throughout the course of our marriage, we have had to discuss, which really means fight, right? We all know that, right? We've had to discuss how this works for us as a couple. Generally, most often, my husband, when I've approached him and said, hey, I think we're kind of doing this a little wrong, generally, he has taken ownership and he's evaluated and he said, okay, I can own that I, being a very introverted person, am using my introverted nature as an excuse to some degree, and he's adjusted. Recently, we had one of these discussions, and he didn't take ownership. And then God very gently swooped in and, like, gently convicted me, okay? A, that I shouldn't tell my husband how to live his life, and B, he asked me, like, what is it that I really want? What is it that I really need? And what is it that I'm really after? And over the course of a few weeks, here's what God gently reminded me of. I am my best and my family is their best when we have high volumes of alone time and quiet time. That the way I'm wired, there are certain ways that I individually and my family collectively, we function best and we thrive best in very private ways. Because that's just the way we're wired, and there's nothing wrong with that. Going even a step further, the other thing God helped me to kind of piece together here is that I had lost my footing and picked a fight with my husband because I got stuck playing the comparison game. I was looking at the rhythm of other people's community life, and I started to think, oh, I'm not doing it as much as they are. Maybe we're doing it wrong. Maybe we're supposed to be spending more time with other people. Maybe we're living more isolated than we're supposed to. And because I didn't allow myself and God to define that win, I lost my footing. And I blamed my husband for a problem that wasn't even his. So here is our next villain. I can experience community on different levels. From reading the Bible and looking at science, we can see another key factor about community is that there is different levels and depths, that community is multidimensional. So here we got some circles. Public connections, these are strangers. You likely don't know their names. Right now in this room, we're kind of engaging in this, okay? Then there's social connections. These are people we probably don't know their names. We might. But we definitely know their faces, okay? There's no inside jokes here, though. These people don't really know who you are. You're like, they probably know the friendly public version of you, not the, like, real you, okay? Down here is where stuff gets real, okay? These are your actual friends. These might not be your BFFs, but they are your legitimate friends. They know you, and they know you're not perfect, and they know your story, the messy parts and the good parts. Like, in this circle right here, we're no longer, like, heroes. We're no longer, like, good guys. We're not the bad guys. We're just, like, complex, messy, dynamic human beings, okay? Then we got intimate connections. Intimate connections is a lot of what you find in personal connections, but it's just with more depth, more familiarity, and more intimacy. And to be super clear, the word intimate has nothing to do with sex. It might have something to do with sex, but it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with romance in this section, okay? So what we see is that we are wired for all these sorts of things. We even see Jesus engaging in all of these various areas. He doesn't ever talk trash about any one of these sorts of relationships. Each one of these different areas has its own value, and the way in which we interact with each of these circles looks differently, okay? Like here, these people in Jesus' life, there's about 12 here and about 3 here. These people, they heard things about Jesus that these people did not hear. These people received certain acts of tender love and care that these people did not receive from Jesus. These people spent more time hanging with Jesus, getting to know Jesus. Jesus knew them. In this area, Jesus knew these people so well that he knew how to love them, but also gently challenge them to grow, okay? It's in these zones, and probably more in this zone, that you have, like, legitimate fights. Not like, I'm going to fight you in the parking lot kind of fights, but like, you really hurt my feelings. Like, I'm not happy, okay? So we see Jesus was able to roll in all of these. Every one of these areas has value. How we interact with every area is different. The other really important thing for us to consider is this. that American research shows us that Americans are really lonely people. For whatever reason, when someone hands Americans these like papers and they say to fill this out anonymously, a lot of people say, I feel alone and I feel unknown, okay? Because it's in these two circles where you're known. Your story is understood. There's truth and there is love in these two circles. Very special things happen in these circles that cannot happen, generally speaking, in this circle. And what studies show is that oftentimes Americans, we get stuck here, and even here, we're not very good at it. And here is like a whole other level of very few people know how to engage in those sorts of relationships. The other really important thing to look at here is that no matter how connected your life is with someone, you're still two separate people, okay? There is always autonomy. You are always your own person. That means that even if we are extremely close, we do not have to think alike, feel alike. We can have different ideas. We have different interests. We have different needs for solitude. We are still two very different people. My sister and I are in this circle. She is one of my best friends. There's nothing about my life, like me as a person, that I wouldn't tell my sister. Me and my sister are very different. We're so different, we camp out on different sides of the spectrum when it comes to our religious beliefs. But the reason we can function here is because there's deep respect to this different autonomy and that we are both responsible for our own lives. I'm responsible for my life, she's responsible for her life. So we function in this zone, but we never lose our sense of self. So the other thing to remember here is that these circles can be very fluid and that not everybody, like the goal is not to get everybody from up here into these zones. In fact, Proverbs 26 tells us this. The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. So what that verse is telling us is that we have to choose with great intentionality who our friends are. What I don't want us to hear is that everybody who you keep over here is a jerk, that they're malicious and evil. That's not it. I'm just wired for certain kind of friends, and you're wired for certain kinds of friends, and it's both of our responsibility to figure out who are these people in our individual lives. And then there is this other reality, okay? Some people, they're just not healthy enough to be in this zone. That by putting them in that zone, you're putting an unhealthy person way too close to you, okay? And while being an adult has a lot of lame responsibilities, one of the coolest things about being an adult, my favorite part of adulting here, is that I get to control, and you get to control who's in this zone. I get to reset and set the boundaries in my own life, and so do you. Your mother-in-law, your boss, your neighbor, your adult child, you pick. You pick what the, like where you want them and how close you want them to be. Nobody can do this for you. The other really important thing to acknowledge is that these circles, while they move, can feel really vulnerable. Friendships moving from this zone or to this zone or vice versa, flowing into this direction, can feel really vulnerable. And when we feel vulnerable, we oftentimes have a disposition to get ugly, okay? We don't like feeling vulnerable, and usually that's when the claws come out, okay? Relational tension and transitional tensions that happen in relationships are gonna feel vulnerable. When things are changing, whether a good way or a bad way, it's very normal for us to feel very uncomfortable and for us to be reminded of how little control we have in life. Like the most extreme examples of this stuff shifting may be divorce or maybe marriage. But it could also be your best friend moving away to college. It could also be your friend getting married so their life looks different. Whatever it is. In that vulnerability, we are reminded that we don't have a lot of control of how life works outside of our own like being. That there's this whole other area of life we just do not control. One of my greatest, deepest regrets as a human being happened in my mid-20s. I had a friend in this zone. Clearly life was shifting where we were gonna like, this is the zone that God was like, that like we should have been in, okay? Hindsight's always helpful, right? So we were in this zone, things were trying to shift here. We both in our own unhealthy ways white knuckled the change and we resisted the change. And what happened was things blew up and things got dirty. And I hurt a friend and a friend hurt me. And I lost a friendship that here we are years later, and I'm still like, that one sucked. Because I really liked who she was. And even though we were able to reconcile, in the sense that, like, if we can hang out, we've both acknowledged and looked each other in the eye and have said sorry, and we've had healing hugs kind of thing. We've never been able to recreate this. We're here. We might one day, but we're not. We're here, okay? I wish I had given her and myself more grace as we were transitioning, because I think we would have been fine living in this zone. But I didn't handle that transitional tension well, and things blew up. Because change, and research tells us this, is hard. Change can be a really good thing, but even when it's a good thing, it can be a hard thing. Research shows that even getting a job promotion can result in negative feelings in your head and change. And so here's what we need to do. One of the unspoken stages of change is grief. If things are shifting in your life in any way and it's hard for you and you're sad, you need to grieve it. And nobody else can determine what's sad in your life and what's not sad in your life. If it matters to you, then it matters. And you've got to grieve it. And here's the cool thing about grief. When we grieve well, we are able to enjoy the good stuff that's going to be coming to us in the season to come. But we have to be able to grieve well. Okay, next up, regardless of the level of community we aim to enjoy, I experience community by taking steps. One of the really cool things about friendship, right, which we talked about, is that nobody can force it on you. One of the unfortunate things about friendship is that nobody can force it on you. You have to take steps. You have to take ownership. This is a process you must own. You choose to make the investments. You have to be the one to do the hard work. Nobody can do it for you. As a pastor and as someone who is in community, I very regularly hear that people are frustrated and hurt because they don't have community. It's like they want to be living in this like results phase of community. And as someone who has it and who gets to observe it all the time, I don't think there's ever this like results, like I did it, check the box, phase of community. I think community is more of like an endless journey that we're constantly taking steps to invest in. And that's how we enjoy community. It's by constantly taking steps. Donald Miller, one of my favorite writers and thinkers, was talking about his business in this way, and I think it completely like hits the spot in what I'm trying to say. He says, like, it's like we see a person, a farmer, selling his best apples on the fruits at a fruit stand on the corner. And we completely forget that all the work and investment and effort it took on the farmer's behalf to get his very best apples on the fruit stand on that corner. Everything that matters to us in life, our health, our marriage, our budget, our parenting, no, whatever it is, okay? Blah, 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 all those things. Generally speaking, we get good things out of them because we make the investment, we do the hard work, we sacrifice. We sometimes have to experience a few bad apples. It's just part of the process. Galatians 6:5 tells us this. Each person must be responsible for himself, regardless of which parts of community are harder or easier for you. Regardless of which parts of community you find yourself drifting towards and which parts you find yourself not enjoying. You are going to have to take care of the process. You must nurture the process. Sherry Turkle has this quote. We are psychologically programmed not only to nurture what we love, but to love what we nurture. Nurture community if you want it. Good things will come as you nurture it, as you do the hard work, and nobody can do that hard work but you. Surfers like to say that riding the wave is only about 10% of what they do. 90% of what happens to a surfer is hard work and waiting. And what we can also know in life is that our response to life is 100% our responsibility as adults. We cannot control what happens to us. We cannot control so many details of our life, but we can respond, choose how we respond and how we handle life. And focusing our energy on what we can control, again, in any area of life, the studies are clear, that's how we get closer to the desired outcome, by focusing our efforts on what it is we actually want. Which takes us to our next fill-in. Experiencing healthy community calls for humility. I know that community can be hard. I know that community can absolutely suck. I know that sometimes, at least in my own life, being alone is a bazillion times easier than trying to engage in relationships, okay? On more than one occasion, when relational tension or conflict has happened, I have actually thought, maybe I should just move. Maybe moving would be easier than dealing with the stress. And on more than one occasion, I have stayed up all night because I have been hurt or I have hurt someone I care about. Just this year alone, I have pieced together that feeling vulnerable in relationships, being whether it's being misunderstood by someone that I thought knew me well, or whether it's not knowing where I stand with someone that I thought I knew, that has a way of triggering my childhood trauma like nothing else. Because I'm walking around with hang-ups, issues, and problems, and so are you. And while your issues and your problems, thankfully, will look different than mine, I don't want yours, and I know you don't want mine. We all have got them. There's this very delicate and fragile nature to relationships. I don't want to minimize that. I don't want to sound like it's all sunshine and flowers and roses. I know it is not. There is an underbelly to community. Even here at Eastlake Church, this place is full of imperfect people. You should meet our staff, right? Like, we are the pinnacle. The bar is low, right? We all walk around with hurts, habits, and hangups. It's bound to get messy. But here is the good news. While relationship stress and tension and conflict can, in fact, damage us, hurt us, and leave us trapped, it can do those things. It can also propel us towards healing, transformation, love, and grace if we are willing to be humble and to own the fact that we have our own issues, habits, and hangups that need love, attention, and repair. See, humility has this fascinating capacity to open us up to wisdom. Humility asks questions like this when tension comes. Humility says, how did I contribute to the problem? What is God trying to teach me here? What good can I learn from this stress and tension and conflict? Our brains are biologically wired to try to decrease pain. It's just our basic impulse. So whether we shift blame and make the other person the jerk and the villain and the monster, or whether we numb the discomfort, our brain is just doing what it's biologically wired to do, and that's decrease pain. Humility takes a level of hard work, but it is the pathway to freedom, to transformation, and to intimate relationships. One of my favorite verses in the Bible, it's not deep at all, okay, but it's so disarming. Paul, who is arguably like the second most influential person in Christianity, the first person being Jesus. So you got Jesus, and then you got Paul, okay? This guy, here's the verse he says. Here's a word for you to take to heart and depend on. Jesus Christ came to the world to save sinners. I'm proof, public sinner number one, of someone who could never have made it apart from sheer mercy. It is absolutely arrogant for us to think we have it all together. It is our pride and it is our ego that refuses to take ownership. We've all got issues. You are in denial or you acknowledge you have issues. Those are the two camps. So when tension comes, we can spend our life blaming everybody else. Or we can take that opportunity to say, oh, what is this bringing up in me? What is this revealing about me? It's this gift that comes from tension and stress. It shows us what's inside of us. Here's a small example. I used to think I was a patient person, but then I had kids. And I discovered that they really frustrate me sometimes. But I probably could get further in life if I say it this way. My kids reveal how impatient and high-strung I actually am. There's two ways to look at this, and we can spend our life blaming other people or numbing that discomfort. But the invitation humility says, it says lean into truth, lean into the fact, public sinner number one, right here in the house, and work on you, focus your efforts on what you can control. So here's our bottom line and the big idea. You belong in community. We were designed to belong. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying I figured this out. I'm not saying I know how this is supposed to look for you. I'm not smart enough. I can barely handle my own life. I can't handle anyone else's life, okay? Romans 12:5 tells us this. So in Christ, we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. So here is the question for you. Are you engaged in a community? Do you feel like you belong? Do you feel connected to other human beings? Do you feel known and loved? Because if you don't, I would love for Eastlake to be a place where you could learn to experience that. But you are going to have to figure out what your next step is. We will not force that on you. We will not push it on you. You have to take that step. So that being said, I want to look at a couple steps here that you may want to consider. And I'm calling them possibly risky steps because I don't know how they're going to go. And I know in my own life, there have been good things that I've experienced, but I've tripped 45 times to get there. I've tried it good, like I've tried it, hit a wall. Got back up, had to try it again, I hit a wall. One more time, hit a wall. And then maybe the fifth time, okay? So I get this might be a little messy. I don't like making things sound easy. It might be hard, I don't know. First one, join a group. The reason this one's risky is because even though we as a staff are working with new group leaders to help them become like Eastlake group leaders, at the end of the day, I have no idea how this group is gonna go. I really don't, okay? And I don't want to promise you anything, okay? You may show up to group and the people might be weird. There may be somebody who talks too much. There may be a person who knows how to solve every problem you have, okay? Someone may even smell funny. I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that things don't need to be perfect in order for them to be good. Perfection and goal don't always come hand in hand. I can have good without having perfect. And I look back at my group experiences, and I have met some really cool people. A lot of my dearest friends are people that I've met in groups. And at a church our size, we can hide in these rows so easily. And there's nothing wrong with hiding if that's what you need. I intentionally hid in a row for a period of time when I first showed up at Eastlake. But if you're going to experience Eastlake as your community, you are going to need to engage in it. And I understand firsthand that that can be very hard if you've tried before and it didn't work, if you've tried to engage with people and you've been wounded. I understand. Relationships can be hard, right? But even though we are wounded sometimes in relationships, we are also healed best in relationships. So the invite is to join a group. Next up, show up to that group. I'm not simply asking you to sign up for a group. There's no magical, nothing magic happens when you check that box, okay? Like, so literally show up to this group. But also, show up in the sense that you allow the real you to be seen. What if the real you came to group and you allowed other people to see who you really were? I'm not saying that you should be transparent. I'm not saying that you should bare your soul. I don't know these people. I don't know if that's a good idea, okay? But I think that we can be authentic and show up and be real without being 100% transparent and letting people into the most intimate places of our lives. Number three, be open. What if you joined a group and it was awesome? What if you met your next best friend? What if you met the next mentor who helped you to grow in your relationship with Christ? What if something awesome happened simply because you took these steps and you showed up to a growth group? Our brains love to figure out the bad things that are going to happen. So my challenge is for every negative what if you think up, what if you think of a positive what if? Just own that you're ignorant. You don't know. I don't know. I don't know. This could go bad. This could go good. Give yourself the opportunity to see what God may be wanting to show you here. Henry Nouwen is one of my favorite writers, and he talks about us walking as sons and daughters of God, as his child. And he says that to walk in the true nature as a child of God, that we should live each day with these like open hands and this expectancy that says, I wonder what good God has in store for me here. So often we spend our life like bracing for impact, waiting for the other shoe to drop, like planning for a bad thing to happen. And I know in my own life, I have learned to do that because trauma, because I felt a certain way and I never wanted to feel that way again. And survival mechanisms work in our brain to say, yeah, let's never feel that way again. So then we plan to think, if I just plan for bad, if I just brace for the impact, then I won't ever hurt as bad. And that's not true. And that's also not the invitation of our God. God is inviting each and every one of us to say, God, what good may you have for me here? Be open to the idea that God wants to do something good for you. And here's the best part of the whole community thing. We're going to jump to the back, the top of the message. God wants to do this with you. Ephesians 5:2 says this, watch what God does and then do it. Like children, you learn proper behavior from their parents. Mostly what God does is love you. Keep company with him and learn a life of love. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious, but it was extravagant. He didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give everything of himself to us. Love like that. Studies show that people who connect best are people who know they are lovable and worthy of love. And that people who don't think they're lovable and worthy of love have a harder time connecting in intimate relationships. And when you read the Bible, it's crazy cool how often you see God saying, let me show you how lovable and worthy of love you are. Step number one is not to just go and be more loving. Step number one is just to go and make friends. No, step number one is to soak and acknowledge and learn and experience just how lovable of love you are, what God thinks about you. He's saying, let's walk out in the world together from this place of wholeness, not this desperate place of wanting to prove and show that I'm lovable, love me. No. But to live life saying, I know that I am lovable and worthy of love, and I know that you are lovable and worthy of love, so let's do this thing together. That is the invitation. Step one is God saying, let me show you that you are lovable and worthy of love. If you'd grab that connection card we talked about earlier, what is your next step of application? I have no idea, but I believe that you might and God does. Do you need to join a group? Maybe you're in a group, but you actually need to take the effort to actually like show up, you know what I mean? Let the real you be seen a little bit. Maybe there's people in your life who you already have friendships with and you're like, oh, I should invest in them a little bit more. Maybe I should invite them to lunch. Maybe I should take some vulnerable step and engage with them deeper. Or maybe you realize that there's some problems in your life and you're just blaming everyone else for them. Research shows us that humble people connect in community so much better. Narcissistic people are the hardest to treat and the hardest to connect with. So maybe there's something you have to own. Maybe you're jeopardizing your own level and need for connection. I don't know. Whatever it is, write it down. We'd love to pray for you. Next here, if you have decided that you need to say yes to God's love, or maybe you want to say yes to his love one more time, and you want to try doing community but in a different order, this time walking out knowing that you are lovable and worthy of love, would you check one of those boxes for us? And we'd love to send you some resources and to pray for you. Let me pray for you right now. God, you know each and every one of us. You know how loved and connected we each feel. Help us to experience your love in very real ways. Help us to engage with others in the ways that you see fit. Help us to trust that you are, in fact, inviting us into something good. And help us to say yes to whatever our next step may be. Amen.